I'm Annie.
And I'm Parker.
And you're listening to
WGXC Acre
Hudson
Catskill 90.7 FM.
Amazing.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés. If you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street. You belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Emily Shemitis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, April 11th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information on any of these stories. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that lawmakers in Albany passed and Governor Kathy Hochul signed into law a second extension to the April 1st budget deadline. Leaders of the Senate and Assembly and governor now have until April 17 to strike a deal on the budget. The main impasse is whether or not to make changes to the state's bail law, which those considered innocent are until proven guilty are held by the state. Passing the extension included a measure to keep paychecks coming to the state's 83,000 workers. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Mid-Hudson News reports that Ulster County Assemblyperson Sarah Hannah Shrestha, a progressive Democrat, is blaming Governor Kathy Hochul for the delay in the state budget. Shrestha said Hochul is not compromising on bail reform issues. She said, quote, "It's not in good faith because if it was in good faith, maybe she should have talked about bail reform and everything else all at the same time. Why is she holding up everything else just to get this thing out of the budget process first?" Unquote. Both Hochul and the progressives want to get rid of bail with the state holding people considered innocent by the courts. But Hochul seems to want more judicial discretion, while Shrestha and other progressives want better clarification on how judges are to interpret any law so that minorities get a fair deal. Read more about this story at midhudsonnews.com. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul on April 10th nominated Rowan Wilson to serve as New York's chief judge. Hochul's previous nominee, Hector LaSalle, was rejected by both the Senate Judiciary Committee and the full Senate. Wilson, if confirmed, would be the first black chief judge in New York history. Wilson is currently an associate judge on the State Court of Appeals, and Hochul also nominated attorney Caitlin Halligan to fill his spot there. Hochul also nominated Joseph Zayas to serve as chief administrative judge on the courts of the court system. Hochul may have an easier time getting Wilson confirmed as Deputy Senate Majority Leader Mike Gianaris, a critic of the LaSalle nomination, came out backing the new nominee, saying, quote, "I commend Governor Hochul for selecting Judge Rowan Wilson and Caitlin Halligan for appointments to the Court of Appeals. I am particularly excited about the prospect of Judge Wilson leading our state's highest court as chief judge," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that after a Texas judge ruled April 7th that it knows better than the Food and Drug Administration and effectively removed approval of the most commonly used method of abortion in the United States, Ulster County-based Representative Pat Ryan reintroduced a bill on April 10th, which would reaffirm that the FDA, quote, has clear and preemptive authority to regulate abortion medication, unquote, and, quote, not extremist courts, unquote. But unless he can convince several Republicans to vote in committee and on the floor for his bill, it won't go anywhere in the GOP-controlled House of Representatives. Ryan originally introduced the bill last fall when the Democrats controlled the House and he represented the 19th Congressional District. Now Ryan represents the 18th Congressional District, and the Republican majority leaves him virtually powerless to pass legislation to make mifepristone accessible to women in New York and elsewhere. Quote, "Mifepristone is a safe and effective medication that has been prescribed by doctors over 2 decades since the FDA approved it. However, the Texas decision has nothing to do with science or medicine and everything to do with radical groups whose only goal is a national abortion ban," unquote, Ryan said. Quote, "My priority is protecting abortion access for women in New York and across the country. This legislation will reaffirm the FDA's approval authority and protect doctors who use telemedicine to prescribe medication abortion," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, April 11th. Local early morning temperatures range from 29 degrees in Stephentown to 45, not very far away, in Scaticoke. Regional average soil temperature is 45 degrees. Pollen is now in medium-high territory for today and tomorrow. Cool day today. Winds get gusty this afternoon, keeping conditions from being officially comfortable, even though we get a high of 71 at 3 p.m. Overnight, the gusts die down, but the regular stiff 13-mile-per-hour winds keep up as temperatures fall to 51 degrees. Tomorrow, another windy day with a bit more sun and a high of 74. Overnight, winds finally calm down and we get a low of 54. Thursday, sunny, high of 83. Friday, it hits 85. Still no freezing temperatures in sight. The weekend is looking wet, but I got a feeling Saturday will end up drying out. Let's see what happens. Today's river temperature will be 44.6 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 7:17 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:17 a.m. Looking way up, we see we got a 5% chance of X-class flares, and a CME arrival is expected today. Geomagnetic disturbances are expected to be light. Solar wind speed is currently 450.5 kilometers per second at 8.1 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark with fair conditions below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 92. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
You gotta try something.
You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Mm-hmm. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The thing is, the president cannot do it alone. There is a legislative process that needs to happen, and Congress needs to act.
Following a shooting Monday at a bank in Louisville, Kentucky that left five dead and more injured, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said President Biden is calling on Republicans and Democrats to take action. During an emotional news conference, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear said he lost close friends in the shooting, but didn't comment on gun legislation.
We've got to do what we have done these last 3 years after everything. We've got to wrap our arms around these families. And everybody who needs it, don't be afraid to get some help.
The Nashville Metropolitan Council voted to reinstate Democratic Representative Justin Jones on Monday after he was expelled last week for participating in a gun violence protest. Jones then rejoined protesters and marched back to the state capitol in support of gun reform following the mass shooting at a private Christian school in Nashville that left six dead last month. Access to mifepristone, a common abortion medication, is in jeopardy as a pair of federal court decisions leaves the drug's future in question. A judge in Texas has invalidated the FDA's approval of the drug, and an order from a Washington judge aims to limit the Texas injunction's reach. Massachusetts Representative Ayanna Pressley has called on the president to declare a public health and national emergency in response to the ruling, which she says will disproportionately impact Black women.
As a Black woman, knowing full well the Black maternal morbidity crisis that one in four Black women die in childbirth or post-birthing complications, this is a matter of life and death.
The CDC says Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than white women. President Biden said the Texas ruling sets a dangerous precedent for other FDA-approved drugs. President Biden signed a resolution to stop the national public health emergency brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. The action will wind down a number of waivers for federal health programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP. The Senate Judiciary Committee's Democratic majority is calling for an investigation of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas after a ProPublica report showed Thomas failed to disclose luxury vacations funded by billionaire Republican donor Harlan Crow for 2 decades. During a CNN interview, New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called for Thomas to be impeached.
My hope would be that we do not get to that point. But once, if we do, I do believe that we must start to push back on our system of checks and balances, which is designed to push back on should there be an example of judicial tyranny and judicial overreach.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our ATRUST indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Experts are still sorting out the seismic impact on Wisconsin's redistricting after the state's April 4th Supreme Court election. Justice-elect Janet Prosewitz won't be sworn in until August 1st, but already a democracy advocacy group has signaled that it will sue to overturn Wisconsin's gerrymandered maps. The Capital Times reports that Law Forward, a Wisconsin voting rights group, will not relitigate the 22 case in which the court endorsed the heavily gerrymandered maps. Instead, the suit will focus on how the maps violated Wisconsin's constitution under a language that it guarantees a free and fair government. Despite the shift from conservative to liberal in the state's high court, it didn't yet change the makeup of the state legislature, which for now is still gerrymandered and under GOP control. The same day Judge Prosewitz was elected, a special election for a state Senate seat resulted in a conservative being elected, giving the GOP a veto-proof supermajority in the Wisconsin Senate. Wisconsin's constitution allows for impeachment of civil officers by the legislature, but it hasn't done so since 1853. According to an article in The Guardian, Senate candidate Dan Knodel said during the campaign that the legislature's impeachment power would, quote, certainly be tested if he were to be elected. If Republicans should impeach Prosewitz, Governor Tony Evers might not have the power to stop it. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Now joining us via Zoom is Margaret Nowak, the curator of the Douglas Davis Interactions Selected Works 1970 to 1980 exhibition that is opening April 15th. It's a joint exhibition of the Create Council and the Arts in Catskill and the Hudson Opera House, Hudson Hall in Hudson. Margaret, are you there?
I am here. Thank you, Tom. I'm so happy to be here.
We are happy to have you joining us today.
Thank you.
So introduce us to who Douglas Davis is, and I guess there's a detailed, I don't know how many degrees of separation that got your involvement.
Oh my gosh, it's not that many degrees, but Douglas Davis was, he died in 2014, so he's no longer with us, but he was a media, digital media artist. So he was a happenings artist in the 1960s, and so that was very much conceptual art, and it was happening, hence the name. So it's very much sort of ephemeral. It goes away. It's just a memory. He started to be interested or to become interested in video in the 1970s and then sort of did happenings on film. And so he was a real pioneer. I feel very strongly for him now that I know his work better. I'm no expert on him, but he's a really interesting and very strong character. He worked with Joseph Beuys, who was another conceptual artist who a lot of people know. He's probably the most famous of this trio that I'll name. So Joseph Beuys, Nam June Paik, which is another famous name, and especially in video art. And there was Douglas Davis. And Douglas Davis, for some reason, just fell out of the group. I'm not sure why. And all of his things, he was staying in a very famous building in Soho, 80 Worcester Street, which was the sort of birthplace of Fluxus, the Fluxist art movement, which he participated in. I wouldn't say he was a Fluxist, but he did run in those circles. And when he died in 2014, he was in a basement apartment there. So he had been on the third floor and he had went down to the basement. All of his files, all of his works, he did prints, he did photography, he did all of his videos, all the master copies were all in this basement apartment at 80 Worcester Street, and they were moved to a house, a relative's house in Woodstock. And from then on, they were just completely abandoned. It was open to the elements. And so this is where I step in. I found out about this collection through relatives, because I happened to be close to the family. And they said, why don't you just go get this stuff and do something with it, you know, try to see if there's an interest in an institution taking the whole collection. And so I did. I literally went and got it. I rented a U-Haul and I went to this place in Woodstock, completely abandoned house. The house is lit, really falling in. The ceiling was falling in, the floor was falling in, and it was all his work was in one bedroom to the ceiling. And I took it all out and with permission of the family and set it all up on the second floor of Catskill, of the Council on the Arts, Catskill. It's where I live. I live in the village of Catskill. And I rented the second floor and spread it all out. And since then, it was October of 2022 that I started this project. And since then, I have had some pretty interesting luminaries from the museum world come in. And see the work and see the collection and see the file boxes full of the process that Douglas Davis took to create these video works that were so interesting at the time. They're anyway, so I feel like I'm rambling on, but do you have any questions for me at this point? I'm going to stop, but
it's a good story. I mean, we've all driven around the Catskills and you pass by those houses with the roofs collapsing in and the doors open and the windows broken. And you never wonder that there might be such treasure inside.
Yes, that's exactly right. And this was a known entity because it was a house on a property of a cousin of my partner, Brad. And it was actually Brad who suggested that I, you know, go for it. So it was it's been an amazing journey learning about, because my background is in historic preservation, very, very far from video art of the 1970s. But I have gotten very interested in this man who, with Nam June Paik and Joseph Beuys, they were sort of prophetic. I hope that's a word. They were really interested in communication, immediate communication via telecast. That's how it was back then. And so they were sort of the precursor of the internet. They were very interested in how this would work. And Douglas Davis, particularly, he was interested in video because it wasn't a memory. It wasn't a happening. It wasn't conceptual art. He could do it on video. He wouldn't edit his videos, and he really enjoyed the idea. He was on. It was like he was in front of a live audience. And then he got into using television, and he would do broadcasts of television with this incredible idea that it was a two-way, that one day television would be a two-way medium. He had no idea, of course, about cell phones, that we would be constantly in contact with each other. He would be astounded right now if he were alive. But he was very, just very forward thinking. And the exhibits are his work, his flat works, as they're called. You know, they're all things that he print. He did a lot of prints. He did a lot of what we call like body painting. You know, he would step on his prints. And so you see a lot of Douglas Davis's feet and his hands. You know, he was very much interested in that. But he was, there will be performances at each venue, video recorded performances that are original. So some of them have never been seen. And so it's very exciting. Or they were seen once and never seen again. But the exhibitions are just sort of to shed light on this really interesting character in the art world. And he does have collections. He does have holdings at the Whitney. He has holdings at the Guggenheim, at MoMA, in Houston. So he is an important person, but he just sort of fell off. And I don't really know why, but I'm trying to sort of get some interest, you know, gin up some interest for this character and show people that he was so forward thinking and such a pioneer. And these shows will be simultaneous. I think he would really enjoy that one is in Hudson and one is across the river in Catskill. And they do show different works. I do have one work that's a particular favorite. He, right during the middle of the Cold War with the USSR at the time, but with Russia, in 1976, he did a telecast with Alexander Melamed and Vitaly Komar, two famous Russian artists at the time, and they were conceptual artists. They did everything sort of happenings-wise. And he did this, he did a series of photographs where there was a black line in the gallery where they were, in the gallery where he was, and it was a series of questions. And they were both holding these boards that said, why is there a line between us? What is this line between us? You know, what does this mean? And it was just like, I'm so taken by this person, and I'm really excited about the shows. And I'm sorry, there I go again. Blah blah blah. So,
well, tell us when did the shows start? April 15th, and how long do they run?
They run until May 28th, and I did get the address. So, if anyone is, I mean, Hudson Hall is one of the, as a historic preservationist, it is a stunning restoration. So if you're into historic buildings, just go for that. But you will enjoy the Douglas Davis show. It is located at 327 Warren Street in Hudson. And there is an opening reception there. It comes after the one at Create in Catskill, which is at 398 Main Street in Catskill. And it's a great gallery. It's a great spot. But their reception will be 4 to 6. Hudson Hall will be 6 to 8. And then it will run until May 28th. But then I have a very exciting guest speaker coming. And it's David Ross, who was the director of the Whitney, the director of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, the director of the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston, and currently is the chair of the fine arts. He has a very long title and I can't think of it, but he is a chair of a department at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. So he's a really important person, and he knew Douglas Davis personally and vouched for his work. And so he's going to be speaking at Hudson Hall on the 21st of April at 6 p.m. And so I really encourage anyone who has any interest in art, conceptual art, anything. This man is a dynamo, and he's just plain speaking, but so sharp. And so I encourage anyone who has, as I said, any interest in really anything in to do with art to please come. And it's free, by the way. All of this is free. So there's no reason not to come.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Margaret Nowak, the curator of the Douglas Davis show that's called Interaction Selected Works 1970 through 1980 that opens April 15th at the Hudson Hall and the Create Council on the Arts in Catskill and Hudson, respectively.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about two different, before sure. we go, yeah. I understand he, Davis, created one of the first ever, if not maybe the first ever, artworks involving satellite transmissions.
Yeah, well, it was actually one of the first on, well, there were two things. Satellite transmission, he did a satellite work with Nam June Paik and Joseph Beuys at Documenta 6 in 1977 in Kassel, Germany. And it was unbelievable. And we're going to show that performance. It's called The Last 9 Minutes because it was the last 9 minutes of the video hour. And so that was a seminal work. That was a one-time thing that had never been, it broadcast to 28 countries. So it was a kind of amazing thing. But what he did in the 90s, and I don't cover this necessarily because my cutoff is sort of the 80s, but he created one of the first artworks that was on the internet.
That was my next question,
The world's longest collaborative sentence. And it is now owned by the Whitney Museum of American Art. And you can log into it. I will have a QR code available at each exhibition so you can log on to it and continue the world's longest collaborative sentence. But this was Douglas Davis, and the Whitney acquired this work in 1995, and it has still gone on. There's still people adding on to this sentence, so he's still with us. It's an amazing guy, really incredible person, and I'm so proud to be representing him.
And this is the sort of, I mean, this is has ripple. This show will have ripples internationally in the art world, and it's sort of a thing that doesn't happen in the Hudson Valley all that often.
I think not. No, I think it's the Hudson Hall group was very excited to host this, and of course, Create was excited. But it is unusual. He was a New Yorker. Although he was born in D.C., he lived most of his life in New York City. But it's he's got relatives spread all over upstate, all over the Woodstock area and in Ulster County. But so I think it's a really interesting thing that you wouldn't see every day. And it has direct relevance to today's world, especially with AI. He would just be, his mind would be blown with artificial intelligence and what's happening now. But he was on it. He was on the cusp of just trying to get people. He said in an interview, he said, imagine a world where people are communicating every second, you know, with each other, with via, you know, he was thinking television as a two-way medium. But now, of course, we're on our cell phones all the time. And he just, he knew this was coming. You know, I guess a lot of people did, but he's an artist. You know, it's such an interesting combination. It's a fascinating character.
All right, we've been speaking with Margaret Nowak, the curator of the Douglas Davis Interaction Selected Works 1970-1980 show, opens April 15th at the Create Council of the Arts in Catskill in the Hudson Hall in Hudson. Tell us about the talk again.
Oh, yeah. So on April 21st, and I really encourage you to come, it's free. David Ross, from most known for his Whitney biennials, he was cutting edge with those shows. He will be speaking on Douglas Davis and the whole Fluxus movement and conceptual art at 6 p.m. at Hudson Hall, April 21st. And it's free. So there's no reason you shouldn't come.
And the two shows both have openings, you said, on April 15th?
That's correct. Yep. And there will be a closing reception at Create on the 28th of May. But just keep an eye out for that. Ask about it if you come to the show. But the openings will be on the 15th. They will occur right after each other. Create is first. Hudson Hall is the grand finale on that evening until 8 p.m.
All right. Anything else that we forgot to mention or you want to mention?
I don't think so. I think I pretty much rambled on, but no, I'm very excited. I'm very hopeful that your audience will come in droves to come and see this. It's very important.
All right. Well, thank you for telling us all about it. And we'll see you out there April 15th at either Create Catskill or Hudson Hall.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the interview. Thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you. Next, here is 2023 new music from African Head Charge. First sounds from them in 10 years or so. This song is called Microdosing on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Tom Rowe with WGXC in Acre with this week's WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 19th and 20th congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representatives Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko vote with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website.
Chris Churchill reports in the Times Union that despite an indictment on 34 charges, Representative Elise Stefanik is standing by former President Donald Trump. Stefanik wrote on April 4th that, and I quote, "The shameful arrest of President Trump is an unprecedented and chilling chapter in the left's weaponization of the justice system against their leading political opponent. Trump will defeat this latest witch hunt, end quote. It is a reverse course for Stefanik, who usually backs the blue and the legal system. Stefanik has previously called for the arrest of former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and often makes references to, and I quote, the Biden crime family, end quote. Stefanik is standing with Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Georgia woman who believes in Jewish space lasers, and George Santos, the serial liar in backing Trump. Stefanik is among the first congressional representatives to endorse Trump's 2024 election campaign. Stefanik now represents Rensselaer County in New York's 21st Congressional District. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul and New York Attorney General Letitia James filed a brief April 7th in support of a Democrat-led court fight seeking to force the redrawing of New York's congressional boundaries in time for next year's election. The boundaries were redrawn after the 2020 census with court orders and controversy and aren't scheduled to be drawn again until after the 2030 census count. The state's Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee brought a lawsuit in a state appellate court in Albany to have the Independent Redistricting Commission redraw the lines before the 2024 congressional elections. James said in a statement that, and I quote, our state's constitution makes it clear that an independent body with participation from the general public is charged with drawing maps for congressional districts, relying on a process with no accountability and with limited time for public input is not how we engage the public and ensure their interests are addressed throughout the process. End quote. But so far, the Democrats have not pursued the court, as on September 12th, State Supreme Court Justice Peter A. Lynch rejected the petition and said there was no authority for the Redistricting Commission to issue a second map. So Democrats are now appealing under the blessing of the state's highest elected Democrats, Hochul and James. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Democrat Pat Ryan and Republican Mark Molinaro together wrote an opinion piece asking for the Biden administration and state leaders to do more to clean the harmful polychlorinated biphenyls from the Hudson River. General Electric dumped PCBs in the Hudson River for decades, and they recently finished cleaning up some of the toxins, but not all. Ryan and Molinaro wrote that the company needs, and I quote, to make good on its stated mission by acknowledging that the cleanup performed to date fails to meet the basic legal and moral test of protecting public health and the environment, end quote. They want Governor Kathy Hochul, Attorney General Letitia James, federal trustee agencies, and the U.S. Department of Justice to negotiate, and I quote, a comprehensive settlement with GE to clean and restore the river, end quote. Ryan and Molinaro represent the 18th and 19th congressional districts, respectively. Currently, the EPA is finalizing a five-year review of the cleanup so far, which was of the upper Hudson River above Troy. Now GE is supposed to study the lower portion of the river between the Troy Dam and the mouth of the New York Harbor to determine the next steps of the cleanup. GE must fund water, sediment, and fish tests along that stretch of the Hudson for PCBs and other contaminants beginning this year under the terms of a legal administrative agreement reached in 2022. Molinaro said in an interview, April 7th, and I quote, we have one opportunity to restore the Hudson River and ensure that those who are responsible must be held accountable. We will not have this opportunity again. The value and impact of the Hudson River is real. What people believe the Hudson River to be is important. To know that it was damaged by pollutants, that we had this chance to restore its value and vibrancy, and we didn't push to end, is a mistake that future generations will not forgive, end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking this week's activities from Representative Paul Tonko and Representative Antonio Delgado, who both represent in Congress many of the citizens in the WGXC listening area. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Tuesday it will be partly sunny with a high near 70 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 52 degrees. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 71 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 51 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM radio for open ear in Greene and Columbia counties.
We do want to recognize at least one of those passing. And that would be Edward Kidd Jordan, who passed on April 7th. The New Orleans-based saxophonist was known throughout the free jazz world and will be known, like this track, forever. Thank you. been listening to Forever from the 1998 album Palm of Soul from drummer Hamid Drake, bassist William Parker, and on saxophones Kid Jordan, who passed away on Friday, April 7th. Here's one more track from the album Living Peace.